Couple of things. First of all, in your packets, you'll notice two pieces of paper. One, the one member survey for members. Please take an opportunity to fill this out. Areas of interest that you'd like to see the Legislative Energy Commission perform additional study on in the interim before next year, as well as next year. And second of all, your blue sheets. Make sure to fill those out so that you can be properly reimbursed for any expenses that you have today. When you complete those, just please pass them up front. Both a member of the House and a member of the Senate have to sign off on both those, so the earlier you can get them here, the sooner you we'll get doing with that. So the first order of business we're going to have is the election of the chair, Senator Goggin.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I nominate Senator Osmick as chair.
Senator Goggin nominates Senator Osmick. Are there any other nominations? Seeing no further nominations, I'll entertain a motion to close nominations.
So moved.
The motion on the floor right now is to close nominations. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Senator Osmick, you are the only nominee for the Senate chair. I assume you do not want to give a speech, so we'll vote by acclamation. All those in favor of Senator Osmick as the Senate co-chair, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Congratulations, Senator Osmick.
It was a hard election. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. Representative Hornstein. Are there any other nominations? Seeing no other nominations, we'll entertain a motion to close nominations. Representative Pepin, do you have a motion to close nominations?
Yes.
All those in favor of the motion to close nominations, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Being that I am the only one here out there, all those in favor of Pat Garofalo as the House co-chair, please signify by saying aye. A sufficient number voting aye. We don't need to take the nays. The motion prevails, and I'm the new co-chair.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, we'd kind of like to have a campaign speech here.
Yeah. Well, you're not. So, again, members, I think that everyone is familiar. The purpose of the Legislative Energy Commission is really for a subset of members of the legislature to study, to learn, to dig deep into these issues. Sometimes we have the opportunity of bringing that knowledge to us. Other times we need to go to where the opportunities are for us to learn. And so the organizing principle, the budget that this commission has, it's really for us to get out, to learn, to study, and to be able to provide legislative leadership, communicate with the private sector, communicate with nonprofit groups to make sure that we have a cohesive vision about what exactly has happened in energy policy, what is happening, and to make our best guesses about where energy policy is going forward. And so with that, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities going forward for this commission to learn. I look forward to serving with everyone. Senator Osmick, did you wish to make any statements or comments about that?
No, you covered it all. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. So the first order of business is going to be the approval of the March 3rd minutes from 2016.
So moved.
So Senator Osmick moves approval of the minutes from March 3rd, 2016. Is there any corrections, additions, or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Next item is we have the commission member interest survey. Again, just fill it out with your suggestions of what you'd like to see us have in that. Is there any feedback people want to offer, any questions on that before they fill it out? Yeah, Representative Makeway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the freshman on the panel, can you walk us through some of the things that have been done in the past or areas of interest that exist?
Well, I would say areas such as energy efficiency, new forms of generation, legacy forms of generation, understanding rate regulation in terms of where it's been, the differences between co-ops, munis, and investor-owned utilities, branching from electricity into the natural gas arena. In addition, there was part of what we're seeing here is the electrification of the motor vehicle fleet. So we had the opportunity to go to California. I believe it was 2 years ago. We visited the Tesla Auto Factory, the plant out in Fremont, as well as met with some of the utilities out in California to understand their programs on the research and development side. So it's really, but I don't feel bound by the previous decisions of previous legislators. Really, it's about what you're interested in learning and what you want to do. So don't feel like you're tied to that.
And one of the issues that I'd like to actually I put down on my sheet is dealing with the secondary impact of the biomass legislation that we had last year or last session. There's some haulers that would like to come in and perhaps talk to us about what type of impact. We already know what the impact is to ratepayers, but we also we didn't get a lot of feedback from the haulers and the secondary contracts that were involved in those facilities. So that's one that's on my list, those types of things.
Understood. Any other questions or comments before we move on? So again, Senator or Senjum.
Mr. Chair, we may have it here, but at some point in time, could our staff perhaps just give us a listing of who the members are of this group on paper? No,
sure.
Big hurry.
And maybe what we can just do is if LCC staff wants to be able to send an email out to members that listing who the House and Senate members are. I look over here. I think I see the full House complement of members present.
Mr. Chair, I can't see the full complement of members here.
We'll have if LCC staff is listening, we'll make sure to get that emailed out to everyone. Any other questions or comments before we move on? All right. So our first item on the agenda is general assessments overview, and we have a representative from Great River Energy here who's going to come up and talk about that with a presentation. And I'm inclined to hear the presentation, and then members can follow up with questions and comments afterwards. And then after that, we'll be hearing from the Vice President of Regulatory Policy from Xcel Energy. So welcome to the commission. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Sheriff Garofalo. My name is Jeff Hawes. I'm with Great River Energy. I work as an Energy Efficiency and Strategic Program representative there. I do have a presentation. Is it loaded onto the computer?
If we could have staff help out with the presentation. I'll have to say the flowers are a very nice effect. It's a very...
I can just work with that.
It's a very calming influence.
That's what I'm going to need. Okay.
All right, you already got that one.
Yeah, the rest of them should be signed by me.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, members. My name is Jeff Hawes. I work for Great River Energy. Great River Energy is a wholesale generation and transmission cooperative serving about 1.7 million members through 28 member distribution cooperatives. The total types of assessments that we pay through both the SIP activities as well as other activities fall into kind of two classes. One is those assessments that are paid by retail utility members only. Those would be represented by our SIP assessments, falling into the categories of research and development, technical assistance, and facilities energy efficiency. In 2016, we were assessed collectively about $817,000 to our members, and we typically get calls from a variety of our members really wondering, you know, what this money is going for and what it's being used for. In addition, GRE and GRE's members are paying other assessments for things such as the reliability administrator assessments. We have specific PUC dockets for certificates of need, siting, and resource planning. And then, while I don't believe it's been assessed, there is LEC assessment authority available for utilities and other energy providers, not just electric utilities. The quarterly assessments have been increasing over time for our members. This can be attributed to a number of factors. I think The biggest one is just the share of our jurisdictional revenue has been increasing as other utilities realize opt-outs from SIP assessments, from members pulling out and end-use customers pulling out. I did want to just say that in addition to, you know, the assessments that we pay for research and development and other activities, our members are involved through GRE as well as independently and many other research and development activities for working with organizations such as the Electric Power Research Institute. We are full members of EPRI, and through that we have an annual ability to spend research dollars on specific projects that we select from a portfolio of offerings that is put forward by EPRI. And this falls into both generation activities as well as end-use power delivery and utilization activities. Presently, some of our involvement is around the area of advanced energy communities, where we're working with the University of Minnesota Morris on a zero-net energy farm, as well as some grid interactive water heating work down in the Farmington Lakeville area, working with Country Joe Homes, a home builder down in that area. In addition, through our membership with the National Rural Electric Association, we participate in a variety of research activities through the distribution co-ops, through the Cooperative Research Network. And this has led us down the path of projects like conservation voltage reduction. And then in addition to all of these activities, which are really membership-based and focused, we do look for opportunities to work with the Department of Energy on any number of research activities, from generation activities to end-use program activities. One of the ways that we do participate and utilize some of the assessment dollars is by deploying and operating the energy savings platform for our members for energy efficiency tracking. This was a switch that we made in late 2014 to try to, well, not try, but really move over to this platform to save our own internal IT budgets and develop something that was a bit more advanced for our members to track their energy efficiency efforts. This has been expanded to all 28 co-ops, and we have the ability to really operate our programs fairly streamlined and have some flexibility with how we can push measures and energy efficiency tracking activities through that platform to our end users. And then we continue to explore opportunities to enhance the operations of this for both speed as well as things like dashboards and other activities that would enhance that service for members. With respect to the research and development activities that we have participated in, we've are currently engaged in some cold climate air source heat pump field study activities using, again, partnering with the Department of Commerce through a grant that is being spearheaded by CEE. That also includes involvement from the Association for the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, ACEEE, as well as GRE and EPRI involved in that. Our past efforts have also helped to build out behavioral program activities with O-Power. This happened a number of years ago when those programs were rolled out for both our Lake Country Power and Kinexus Energy utilities, and we continue to explore modifications to those programs and new opportunities for behavioral program activities. And then, you know, there's certainly the question of how does the R&D efforts that exist right now break down between something that is somewhat more specific to a utility, which many of our utilities are looking for, very specific applicability of the research outcomes, versus general R&D efforts that would be more broad-based and informative from a general standpoint, but may not be as specific as needed to move forward with things. One of the things that we do deal with annually is just budgetary restrictions. This year in particular, we've seen a very high level of participation in our SIP programs, primarily through LED, both new construction and retrofit activities for LEDs, which are really straining our budgets. And we operate on a rebate budget for all of our members of about $6.2 million, and many of our members have either completely exhausted or are nearing the end of their budget allocation because of the activity that's occurring. And that is just some of the feedback that I get, is that while we run out of dollars, you know, there's questions around the assessments that are in place, especially as those quarterly invoices come into our membership, and they're wondering exactly where the value is that we're getting from this. And while we've been able to take advantage of some of that, and we explain that, there's still going to be questions about the member value associated with the assessments, and especially in light of restrictions and limitations on their own rebate dollars. And that's all I had for you today, and I certainly entertain any questions that any of the members may have.
Thank you. Any questions from members of the commission? Thank you very much for your presentation. We appreciate it. Next up, Xcel Energy. Welcome to the commission, sir. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Garofalo. My name is Al Krug. I'm the Vice President of State Regulatory Policy for Xcel Energy. Just have a very brief presentation today, and of course I'll entertain any questions. First, just wanted to give you a little overview of our experience with billings, regulatory billings for Xcel Energy overall. Over the last 5 years, we've paid on an average approximately $7.4 million annually for regulatory billings from both the combined Department of Commerce and Public Utilities Commission, and in addition to that, all the support that they receive from the Office of the Attorney General when they use their attorneys. That represents approximately 0.2% of our total revenues in the state. Those billings consist of they come in two forms, direct billings and indirect billings. Direct billings are actually very detailed bills when we make a filing, either, for example, in a rate proceeding or some other filing. The regulatory agencies bill us by hour for their staff that are being used on the case, and of course each staff person has a billable hour, and all of those are directly billed to us, and we have detailed records of that. The indirect bills are for various unassignable costs, overhead and other items, and those are done more formulaically where based on the size of the utility, and in our case, we're the largest utility in the state, we're billed, we take a share of those costs. The indirect and direct costs roughly represent about 50% each of the total billings per year. The billings tend to vary annually, primarily due to the amount of work that we ask the agencies to do. They've typically varied from around $5 million all the way up to about $9 million, primarily based on things we asked them to do. Most recently, we've had placed very high demands on the agencies through all the various proceedings that we've and filings that we've made. So that's essentially how it varies year to year. In terms of how we interact with other jurisdictions, our Minnesota customers pay for all of those costs, and those were the figures I gave you. In other states, customers in other states do not pay for the Minnesota proceedings. However, they, of course, have their own proceedings. And so, for example, in South Dakota, when we make filings in that state, they bill us for those, and South Dakota customers pay for that in a similar formulaic way they pay, and the same in North Dakota and also in Wisconsin. So that's a very brief overview, and I'm available for questions.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions or comments from members of the commission? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Krug?
Krug, yes.
Krug. You know, you ran through a lot of big numbers, $7 million, $5 to $9 million, largest utility, and your ratepayers are paying it. are the rates that you're paying or the costs that you are that are charged to you in Minnesota, are they comparable to the other states? So if Minnesota is charging you $100 an hour for one of their commission's employees' work, is that the same rate or comparable rate in South Dakota or Colorado or any place else you may have a facility?
Representative Mahoney, I'm not sure that I have the answer to that. We certainly could get that for you. That, of course, would vary by, you know, each state has different size. Their staffs are vary by size. They also vary by the amount of regulatory requirements in each state. So I would have to follow up. I apologize. I don't have that information on hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I just wanted to make sure that XL rate payers are not being overcharged in order to cover the lion's share of the cost of anything in the state. I mean, everybody should be on the same playing field, and one of the ways that I can get to that is figure out if Colorado is charging you the same amount of money for an hour's worth of work that Minnesota is, or if in that way. So
sure,
please get it back to me.
Yes, definitely.
Senator Sundjom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Krug. I think I know the answer to this, but relative to these assessments, that would not include the RDF, et cetera. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That would be a separate charge.
Thank you.
Seeing no further comment, or Senator Goggin.
Thank you, Mr.
Goggin.
Chair. Mr. Krug, you mentioned that XL asks the agencies to perform work. What drives you to have to ask the agencies to perform work such that you're having to pay for those services?
Mr. Krug.
Well, Senator, for example, if we were to request a rate increase in our state, the agencies are required by statute to review that those filings, and, of course, that's fairly intensive review. They have many staff that participate in that review. And so what I meant by asking them to perform work, anytime we make a filing requesting a change in rates or a change in our resource mix, they are going to be involved, and that's how they bill us.
Seeing no further comments or questions, thank you very much for our testifier. It's appreciated. And our final testifier today is Mr. White from Xcel Energy. Now, Mr. White, the last time I saw Sean White, you were on the half pipe at the X Games. Is that you?
No, sir.
Okay.
That was not.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Sean White. I represent Xcel Energy as the manager of DSM Strategy and Financial Operations. I believe everyone has a copy of a presentation that was handed out at the beginning of the meeting. The electronic version was sent over just a little bit ago, so that may not be available for projection. I was asked to give an overview of Xcel Energy's SIP program, and SIP at its core is enabled by legislation, which provides the environment that the programs must operate in. It's identified as a low-cost resource, and it benefits both customers and the environment. Utilities, energy providers, play a pivotal role in operating these SIP programs in that they have access to customer usage information, and they're able to manage the energy supply as well as the help customers manage the energy demand. It's taking a holistic look at the entire process of providing energy. Cost effectiveness is established as a requirement for running these energy efficiency programs. Practically, for customers, cost effectiveness means that the customers save money on their bills. It makes businesses more competitive, reducing the cost of their products. Residential customers should see bill savings. from an analytical perspective, cost effectiveness takes a look at the cost of purchasing energy efficient equipment, the cost of running a program for energy efficiency, and balances that against the benefits, which are, come in the form of the cost of the energy we didn't have to supply. That includes generation, transmission, and distribution, as well as environmental factors. In looking at how Minnesota performs, Minnesota's consistently in the top tier of performance when compared to other states. National agency recently ranked utilities where Xcel Energy was one of only two Midwestern utilities in the top 10. They looked at things like the percent of sales of energy efficiency achieved, the spending and ensuring that low-income needs were addressed, as well as the diversity of participation, the diversity of programs, and making sure that all customers have the ability to participate in these programs. I've got a table for you there that shows both the cost to run these programs and compares that to the benefits that are generated, which are net of those costs. 90% of those costs go right back to the market, mostly in the form of rebates to customers, but also in support of supporting trade vendors that help implement programs, things like that. The remaining 10% is really the labor and administration to run the programs. And from a recovery standpoint, this represents 3 to 4% of a customer's bills. And of course, the intent is for the bill savings generated by participating in the programs to outweigh that that recovery. I think the last thing I want to touch on is the how do we know that the savings are real and that customers are getting the value from these programs? So we do go through a stringent approval and review process, annual reporting to the Department of Commerce. We prospectively file three-year plans that the department reviews. And internally, we verify savings in several different ways. One is on-site inspections, taking a statistically significant sample to look at the equipment that was installed at a customer's site, make sure it's the equipment that that was on the rebate application, and that it's operating appropriately. We utilize third parties to evaluate our programs, to determine best practices, to look at processes and procedures, and even things like customer satisfaction. Are the programs easy enough to use for customers to participate? And then in cases of large projects, we'll even do on-site pre-monitoring, install the equipment, and do post-monitoring to ensure that the savings that are calculated are realized. Knowing that that these programs impact customers and the communities that we serve, it's important to engage stakeholders, which we do in several ways, both through public comment process as well as, in some cases, in product development. Our recent multifamily program was really the result of a large stakeholder engagement process. And finally, we're performing well. We're recognized for it. But we have to be innovative and stay abreast of new technologies, how the market is changing, codes and standards, how our generation system is changing over time as well. And we hope to continue to do that. Thank you very much.
Question from the commissioners. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. White, on page 3, you've got the table and you show the net avoided energy costs. Is there an idea of what percent of capacity is being alleviated by these programs instead of just the dollars? And then also, what on the gas is the utilization capacity? In other words, how much additional expansion in the state economy is available? Because in the Rochester area, they had to add another distribution line because they didn't have any other capacity in Rochester. So I'm just curious about that in relation to what this program is gaining us in capacity and then also where we're at.
Mr. White.
Yes, sir. And the measurement of how much we're gaining on the system, it really is a percent of sales. So on the electric side, for that spend, we reduced about 1.8% of our sales, our average 3-year sales. On the natural gas side, it was about 1%, maybe 1.1 for 2016. If you're talking about capacity as kW, the value of that that peak capacity is no. Okay,
Mr. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Clarification on the question is the pipelines have a calculated capacity of distribution. And what capacity are we at? A few years ago, we had an issue with winter heating, and we didn't have the supply. Part of, I think, what we should be doing is understanding that as the economy in the nation and the state starts to expand again, how are we sitting, and you can't snap your fingers and build capacity instantly. So forward looking at where we're at with the NG pipeline capacity.
Mr. White.
Thank you for that clarification. I don't know the answer to that. I think it's probably something our planning folks are thinking about, and I'm just not privy to that information. Hopefully we can find it and get back to you.
Further questions? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you tell me, tell us, the large users versus small users with your SIP? I mean, where are you seeing the greatest energy efficiencies gathered from? If you, as a industry that has to use this day in and day out, you know, there's multiple occupations here, but none of us are really energy people. One of us works at a refinery every once in a great while when I can't avoid it. Could you tell me where, or suggest to us, or give us some areas where we could look at that could improve this program or utilization of this program?
Mr. White.
And to respond to your first question first, roughly 50% of the savings comes from residential and 50% from business. Certainly the size of a project is a lot larger when you get into the industrial side. When we work with customers to improve energy-intensive types of processes and things like that. Improvement for the SIP program, I think, is something we're evaluating right now through the Minnesota Department of Commerce's potential study. One of the areas is looking at, you know, what policies are in place and need to be changed or could be changed to offer that improvement. I don't think I'm prepared to propose any wholesale changes, but definitely something to evaluate as we move forward as part of a stakeholder.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Mahoney. Chair. So when do you envision you and the Department of Commerce being done with that, looking at how you could improve it? Is that between now and February 20th of next year, or now and this time next year?
Mr.
White. In other words, do you think you might have some answers to that particular question by session?
Mr. White.
I believe the process for, and when we have people here from the Department of Commerce that that know the schedule quite a bit better than I do, but I believe it goes into the first quarter of 2018 for initial study drafts. So we'll be conducting that research and those discussions throughout the rest of this year in preparation for making recommendations. I don't quite know if it'll be during session or not.
Further questions? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to go back to the, I guess, the first slide. And it talks about, in practice, cost efficiency or cost-effective energy efficiency means residential customers see lower bills. And that all sounds pretty logical. Obviously, if you use less electricity, you're going to have a lower bill. But I wonder so often, I don't want to get too parochial and go back home, but it does seem to me, as at least my community, as we use less electricity every year, it does force then the city, in our case a municipal utility, to have to raise their rates to meet the incremental costs that they have, their investments, their salary increases, and on and on and on and on. So does it really mean that residential customers see less bills as we use less electricity? Do not the rates just increasingly increase to accommodate that, you know, the phenomena that it's real in life and that things just cost more?
Mr. White.
What the cost effectiveness analysis is meant to show is that even if there is an increase in rates due to other reasons that you've just described, that rate increase would be slower over time than without the energy efficiency efforts.
Okay.
Senator
Mr. Chair, perhaps I would like to put this on my little crib sheet that, you know, it would be nice to see that on data at some point in time. I'm going to believe you, but, you know, in practice, I kind of wonder. So that's fine for today.
Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to that point, I think just some anecdotal, I can remember having a conversation with the local director of the YMCA in Marshall. And his comment to me was along the lines of energy efficiency and the works that they're doing on heating and pumps and electrical use is that they use half the electricity they did 10 years ago when they first built their facility, yet their bill is twice what it was when they built their facility.
Senator Dipple.
I think I'd like to add my name to Senator Senjum's little extra bite at the apple here, because we have this never-ending conversation about whether conservation and efficiency is cost-effective or not. And so I think it bears a basic primer on when it is, how it is, when it's not, how it's not.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. White, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Members, I just want to ask a couple questions before we adjourn. I'm anticipating, or my preference is to do these meetings more in the afternoon. Is there an objection to that? Is it more convenient to do it in the morning for some people, or is there a I really don't care attitude? Representative Kwong.
So that it doesn't hit rush hour either, that's my only request.
Well, Representative Kwong, you're outstate, so you don't have rush hour, do you? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's such a long distance for me to get here that I would prefer that.
I do know that commute from St. Paul can be really bad at times.
4.4 miles.
Okay. Senator Root?
I think a little earlier in the afternoon so that we don't adjourn at 5 o'clock. You know, otherwise we're getting home when we have long distances, it's 10 o'clock at night when we get home. So, you know, if we could just move it up a little early in the afternoon, it would be fine.
Okay. I think what we'll try to do is, depending on how heavy the schedule is, try and make sure we're out of here by 4. So that would vary the time, maybe at 2, maybe at 3, maybe at 1, depending on what the load looks like. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick brief announcement for the Republican members of the LEC. We're just going to powwow, House members. We're going to powwow really quick, just behind me over here for a few minutes. So don't leave until we talk.
Behind another closed door?
No, right over here.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo had a few messages to me that he wanted me to pass on to the DFL members, so we'll have a very, very quick meeting here in the room afterwards.
And I don't anticipate any senators meeting, so House guys can all meet in, if you wish. Members, if you haven't turned these in, please do turn them in. I think we've got all of them now, but make sure you turn those in, as well as the surveys. And seeing no further business, this meeting of the LEC is adjourned.
I wish we could have it.